We explore cybersecurity. Guiding you through online threats, we'll aid you in understanding safety protocols and trends. Meet our gurus, Brian from ExactIT, Reginald from ArcSolvers, and Randy from TechRescue. Together, we'll delve into current events and hot cybersecurity topics, helping you comprehend their impact. Stay informed, stay secure. Security Squawk, the business of cybersecurity. Buckle up, let's dive in.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Security Squawk podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Brian, here with Andre and Randy. How are you, gentlemen?
Hey, what's up?
I'm good. You know, we've been in the green room for like 30 minutes, and I just now realized that Andre's got some sweet headphones.
When'd you get those? I'll be rapping for you guys soon.
Well, in reality, he only had them on for like 5 minutes of the 30. Like, just put them on. So, guys, we got some stuff to talk about today. We got a potential cyber attack at a major hotel chain that's not in the news that we're going to bring to everybody live on the show. We're going to let you know. It's our cat's kind of already out of the bag in the show title of who we're going to talk about. We also have a massive data breach at a major cell phone provider that we're going to get into as to what was the big deal there, because I think it is a big deal. We have another K through 12 school in the United States under attack, shut down because of cyber criminals, a favorite target. And then we're going to dive into a little bit about a issue in our industry that we kind of want to bring to light for most businesses, because if your business uses an outside IT company or an MSP or MSSP, you're going to want to pay attention to a recent lawsuit that has hit the books. We're going to dive into what that lawsuit is, why this impacts you, and why you should care even if you're not an MSP. So before we do, remember the show, Randy, as we say, you're going to take this one for me.
Yeah. So support our show. We'd really appreciate it. And you can do that by both commenting on it, clicking on like wherever you have a chance, sharing it with your friends. We like to provide this show for free, but it doesn't come without a cost. It's more like free as in free beer. And if somebody gives you a free beer, that's a great day. And so we're bringing a day of free content with learning about the latest cybersecurity news and breaches and all that jazz. So like, subscribe, and comment.
Yeah, you guys know what to do. I mean, social media has been around forever. If you listen to podcasts, you know what to do over there. If you watch us on social media, you know what to do there. If you're on YouTube, like and subscribe. For our YouTube channel that we don't even like put 1 ounce of like thought or promotion into, got to say that, you know, we get some views and we get some subscribers there. We literally do nothing for that. Because really we want to drive everything on social and then a podcast. We just put it out there on YouTube for convenience and reach. But good stuff. Appreciate it. Thanks, Randy. And let's get right into it, guys. We have a potential data breach over at a major hotel chain. There's speculation, and I was doing research for the show and I kept coming across this name, and I'm like, why do I keep seeing this name as a potential cyber attack? And while this company did have a major data breach back in 2016, eight years ago, I couldn't find anything relevant around what I was seeing. And I was like, why is this showing up in places? Like, I don't understand it. And then sure enough, I stumble upon this Reddit post, and I'm going to share it up on the screen here, guys. But this is like breaking news here on the Security Squawk podcast, where it appears that there has been a Omni Hotel system outage over the weekend. And as we scroll through this Reddit post, we see comments from employees, which we haven't seen this in a while, guys. Like, most companies at this point have a pretty well-defined like social media policy or strategy that you don't go run into the internet when adverse things like cyber attacks happen to a company. I mean, you guys remember in the early days of the Security Squawk show, we used to find stuff like this all the time. Like, okay, mm-hmm. If it's not in the news, we can find people on Reddit or Twitter talking about it, or X. We didn't go over to X. I kind of forgot about that platform, but here we are with posts in Reddit who are multiple people, either guests or people that work there, who are saying that, yeah, this is a thing, and Omni hotels are down. So if we just read some of these comments, right? Somebody's just saying computer systems are down corporate wide. Checking in on paper, no card machines work, even room keys do not work. Everyone has to be escorted to their room by an employee, and the phones and Wi-Fi are down. Anyone else staying in an Omni that can confirm this is an issue at their location? I'm currently at the Louisville Omni, and it's a huge pain in the ass. And then a lot of people start chiming in saying, it's the whole company. There's somebody here at Amelia Island who's experiencing issues. This is a low-level employee who's saying, yes, it was a rough weekend, and they're concerned that, you know, they might not get paid, that they're going to surely lose millions. Apparently, the Grove Park Inn in Asheville, North Carolina, having the same issues. Wonder if it's random. I guess I meant ransomware or upgrade.
Randomware.
And just, let's take a look at the price. I'm in AVL and can confirm it's down there too. Omni Shoresham in DC. We do have working room keys, but all our other transactions are cash only or room charge. Vegas size lines to check in last night. Outage is system wide, the bar staff says, although the bar is open. So I'll just keep reading through these comments. If I see anything interesting, I found
a couple.
Go ahead, Randy.
So I found a couple 15 hours ago, still down in Nashville. 10 hours ago, still issues at San Diego. It looks like it's ongoing. If it's settled,
it's now, crazy because just today, one of the biggest IT and cybersecurity conferences is going to happen at the Omni Nashville. If it's not this week, it's next week. Pretty wild.
Here's one and I got from 3 hours ago. They just checked out of Amelia Island. System still down. So
I got one here too. This person posted a picture of the lobby. Says, "What a disaster!" Here, I'll share my screen.
So this person says, "We stayed at the Omni in Richmond with a big wedding party over the weekend. Everyone who stayed just started getting bills emailed to them. The bill isn't itemized, and people are being charged different amounts for the same rooms, even though we had a set room price for the wedding. The email has a link to another website that is asking for credit card info, even though they gave them the details when they checked in. Seems a bit weird, so we are asking our guests to hold off paying until there's some more official through hotel's actual website." So you could be looking at a situation where the cyber criminals are ahead of the hotel, and they're now sending people bills for the entire weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, look, these people are staying there now. Let's get them a bill and send them a credit card link and see if they'll pay us, $1,000, $2,000 for their room. And Omni's not getting anything, and it's going right to these cyber criminals. That's how quickly these guys will act on this stuff. And if you don't think that this is a legit scam that's going on because they have this information now, you're sorely mistaken. What are your guys' thoughts? Do you think that that's a backup, a incident response plan mechanism in place by the hotel? Or do you think this is criminals that are already like 10 steps ahead of the whole event?
I see no contingency plan, and I see no separation of systems. I understand
that the bill isn't itemized. Like, this guy's basically saying, like, this is a huge like red flag for us, and we're not. And they're saying we're asking our guests to hold off from paying until there's something more official through the hotel's actual website.
Yeah,
this is somebody on the inside basically saying, like, we don't even know where this email came from, and we're telling people not to pay it.
Hmm.
Wow. That's disturbing. I see what you're saying. I didn't get that part. So maybe the criminals are in the system actively and sending out payment requests to clients as we speak. Is that what you're saying?
What's that?
Are you saying that potentially the criminals are in the system and sending payment requests to clients as we speak? Yeah, yes. I just found one from 35 minutes ago from Omni Royal Orleans, which I assume is New Orleans. 4 to 5 hours to check in, assigning dirty rooms, walking in on rooms with people in them. Ouch. Bellhops are having to open the doors using master keys. It's a total disaster.
Wow. So this guy says he was at that wedding and he never received an email with a statement and they haven't been charged, but his credit card did have a suspicious charge under GoPuff on his credit card account, pending charges today. He does not use GoPuff and never has. And he called twice about it and was manually entered by a human on March 31st for GoPuff, not once, but twice. Location ping that is St. Louis, had to close the card number and get a new one.
Wow.
So, yeah, it looks like we definitely have a problem here, Omni. Maybe we'll hear something soon. I would imagine this is a publicly traded company. I think they are, right? So I'm going to think that they're going to have to disclose something fairly quickly here.
Yeah. I'm on their Twitter page. They said that their value guests are this is 20 hours ago. Our technology team is continuing to work on restoring our systems that are currently down. Your business is very important to us. We appreciate your patience and apologize for the disruption. Please check back here for updates.
Wow.
That's it. That's the only thing they posted, and that was 20 hours ago.
And that's only on Twitter. Nothing on their website?
No, I went on their website. Very nice website, but they didn't mention anything. And then the same message on Facebook.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, the website didn't seem to be down. And I think we had read from Thursday or Friday that some of the people were saying the website was down as well. Didn't we read that early on? Or did we read that in the green room?
They said servers are down and their servers are down, but nothing specifically about the website, but definitely the ability to transact and pay for things has been impacted from what I can tell. So we'll keep everyone updated on this, but this is kind of like breaking news. As we said, and there's nothing really out there in the news about Omni having a problem. But as you can see, if you are one of those businesses that is publicly facing, you don't have the luxury of, like, say, you know, a private accounting firm or a law firm who can kind of maybe skirt under the radar and not report this stuff and not have to say anything, and their customers don't really notice. If your business isn't one of those types of businesses and you don't have the luxury, like an accountant or a lawyer might have, when Omni has this problem, they have customers and employees running to the internet basically saying, yep, there's definitely a problem here. And, you know, and you're essentially getting a play-by-play on Reddit. And I'm sure if we search Twitter, we'd find a lot of the same, that you don't have the luxury that other private businesses have when you have these problems, because you're publicly facing and people can see it and they can't transact with you. So it becomes public really, really fast. Any more thoughts on this, guys, before we move on? All right, I'm going to stop sharing. So here we go. Next topic we're going to discuss, I think, is AT&T, right, guys? Yep. That's the next one on the books. AT&T. So
breach deck keeps on giving.
Yeah, man. So this data breach, the interesting thing for me, I was thinking about you, Andre, over the weekend. I had noted, this didn't hit my radar because when I heard about it, I checked my phone number. My phone number wasn't in the database, so to speak. So I guess I kind of like blew it off after that. And I knew it was out there. I've been hearing about it for about 2 weeks. But it only hit the news over the weekend, which was wild to me. Like, it seemed like this was the story on Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, isn't that convenient for AT&T? Like, when everybody's like watching NCAA or watching baseball or, you know, hanging out with the family doing, you know, Easter stuff, they're putting this stuff out on CNN. What they put out was AT&T confirming a data breach linking information of 73 million customers. So what did they steal, guys? What was stolen, and where does this data now live and exist?
Well, we got 73 million AT&T customers, and they're saying names, address, phone numbers, social security numbers, date of birth, and account information. So basically your life. Everything a hacker needs to make your life miserable and use your information.
Yeah, we all know what it takes to get a cell phone, at least in the United States, right? It's basically a credit check at the end of the day. So the same information you give a credit card company when you're applying for credit, you're basically giving a cell phone company. And that's what they store. And that's what's been stolen here to the tune of 73 million. Now, I don't know why. When I checked mine, right, and I didn't see my number as part of the data set, I'm like, that's weird. Because I'm an AT&T customer, and I have been since I was 16 years old. So 32 years.
Tell us more.
Right? 32 years I've been a customer of AT&T, right? So I figured there's no doubt my stuff is in here. But it wasn't. So the only thing I can say is maybe the personal consumer side got hacked and the business side is separate because I have a business account. Maybe that's why I skirted this. I don't know how it was 73 million, because you would figure that's pretty much everybody, right? That has a consumer account with AT&T. That's a lot of people.
Well, it says that it's 7.6 million current account holders and 65.4 million previous account holders. So they probably have more than 7 million right now, maybe,
Yeah.
And you asked where is the data? Apparently it's on the dark web.
Oh, no. It's
living right now. That's what it sounds like.
Okay. And what's the status? Is it for sale? Is it up for auction? Where does that leave it? Is it just out there published and people can just kind of come along and look? I mean, I guess it's actually on the surface web now, because isn't there a website you can
search? Yeah, it sounds like it's a data set on the dark web containing all of that, which means it sounds like it's just.
Yeah, but if somebody went and created a database that you can now search to see if your data set is in there, that is now on the surface web. That is not on the dark web anymore. Right. Somebody is now, and that can happen, right? Some guy who thinks he's doing a service to everybody, like, oh, let me create this website so people can figure out if their data is in this data set. Well, if he took it from the dark web and put it in a database that's now on the surface web, that's a thing that can happen. Like, people who think they're just doing the right thing are now making people even more at risk because of where they're placing this information.
Right.
Not to say it's that big of a deal. Like, it doesn't take much to go on the dark web. I mean, really, I think if most people think it's like this technical or big thing that you need to do, it's very simple, quite frankly. Yeah, you got to jump through a couple more stupid little hoops to get there. But at the end of the day, it's pretty simple to get there. So if I'm an AT&T customer, guys, what does this mean for me? What do I need to watch out for?
Watch out for any phishing emails that may try to get you to reset your password, or to, they may have some information. So they may say, hey, John Doe, account ending in 54321, social ending in this is your address. They're going to act as if they know who you are. And then they're going to want you to, click on some type of email. And then from there, that's where it happens, where they're going to now trick you and then use your information to then again, just make your life miserable and just steal your data even more.
Yeah, that's
also includes date of birth.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, like, right? You got to watch out for those phishing emails, like we kind of warned about, and when we talked about Omni, and then you got straight up identity theft. Like people's information is out there. I mean, you're going to be able to use the Loan Depot breach and, you know, the Fidelity breach and then the AT&T breach. And you're going to be able to merge all this data and say, hey, give me all the data points on Randy Bryan, right? And now I have, from one breach, I have 8 pieces of information. From another breach, I have 4 more pieces of information. From another breach, I have 5 more pieces of information. What are the chances that I got enough information from those 3 breaches on Randy that I could go try to pretend to be Randy and maybe like buy me a house in Wyoming or something? I don't know.
As long as I can come stay there, I'm good with that.
And the crazy thing is, I'm on their website right now as it relates to the breach, and they're mentioned the points that we just made about how the, you know, what now if you were affected, what you should do. They don't mention anything on that. And then I also just checked their stock, and they're for the week they're up 0.49. They're up 2%. So this didn't even affect their stock.
Wow.
It usually doesn't.
I was gonna say, so it includes the birthdays, which is very personal potentially. Also, I would tell people to be very wary of what we call smishing, SMS phishing. We recently did that with an organization. We were able to know, all we knew about the entire organization is one person's like position and what they do. And we sent a phish test using their SMS numbers and were able to get about 40% of the people to click. Was devastating if you think about it. And so that's just with a tiny amount of information. So imagine if they have all of this and they're able to corroborate all of that information together with targeted schmish campaigns, that could be devastating as well. So.
Oh, crap. I just checked. I'm on the list.
Oh, no. What's the URL to go check?
No, I did have Ivan Pong and it showed up.
Oh, okay.
It showed up for the March 2024 breach.
Wow. It's crazy. So, all right. So here's the other thing I wanted to talk about with this breach. Your thoughts, number one, on AT&T's response. Do you think it's been adequate?
Yeah. I'll be even shocked to get a letter. Or maybe they're going to do that for the regulators so that they can at least tell the regulators they did something. But I mean, this is when the government has to go and, you know, hone down on them and give them like a massive fine where they're going to regret, you know, ever being lax. Like, I still don't understand of how do you have this much information, especially if there are 63 million past clients.
Yep.
Or how come that data doesn't, if it's at rest, why isn't it encrypted? Why isn't it just stored somewhere where it's like only need to know bases of like, you know, supervisors or whatever, but like, why is that just out there like that it could just be downloaded and then uploaded somewhere else?
Yeah, man. Good point. I agree. I don't think their response to this has been what I would expect of a company like this with the magnitude of data. So I think regulators are going to learn from this. But I also want to bring up the other interesting thing that I found with this article and this event is we talk about ransomware groups a lot, guys. Mm-hmm. And we talk about all these different groups. We've mentioned Black Cat and AlphaV, you know, Lockbit over the years. And we've educated people on ransomware as a service and kind of how that whole ecosystem works. But this kind of brought to light this group called Shiny Hunters. And let's talk about Shiny Hunters for a minute and educate people on what Shiny Hunters does and what their specialty is when it comes to cybercrime, because they're not they're not a ransomware group, but they are one of the most prolific cyber criminal groups that have existed in the last, say, 3 or 4 years. And this group, their specialty is to do exactly this, to steal massive amounts of data, and then they make money by selling it on the dark web to other scammers and other criminals. So you can think of Shiny Hunters as kind of like the Zoom Info for cyber criminals. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a database of information on people, and you can just come along and buy that information and then just try to start using that information in your scamming operations. That's kind of what's going on here, right? So they're the database, or they're the cold email database, so to speak, for cyber criminals who want to do identity scams, identity theft, try to call you up and get you to wire money to them, you know, through some kind of scam, get you to go to CVS and buy $8,000 in gift cards. This is all information that is bought and shared with these cyber criminals when they perpetrate their victims. Any thoughts on Shiny Hunters or these data breach groups that are just stealing data and selling it, guys? Or pretty straightforward. Randy's like, yeah, no, I'm not touching that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting that, like, there's this whole specialty here of, like, stealing data and reselling it. You know, it's not like it's Alf V or Black Hat, like another same ransomware group just doing more stuff. This is now a specialized group where they're like, hey, we're not going to do ransomware. We're just going to steal data and resell it.
It's still just as criminal, though, you know?
No, it's just criminal, but it just, you know, they figured out how to specialize in something and make money from it. It goes down to what we talk about in business all the time, riches and niches, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what they've done. You know, they've figured out a niche that has made them quite rich, if you look at the numbers. So let's talk about a ransomware group or ransomware. Move into our third topic.
Oh, one more thing. Sorry.
Oh, wait. Oh, Kurt. I thought we were done. My bad.
No, one more thing. So I just checked X, Twitter. I don't know why we always still say Twitter and X anyways, whatever it's called. So I just checked X on AT&T, and they're only talking about March Madness brackets, basketball brackets. Okay. So not even mentioning this attack or the news.
Yeah. Right. So. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I got an email on Friday from AT&T asking me to buy pen testing services from them.
Oh, wow.
I was like, yeah, okay.
They probably deep down in their terms of service, Andre, they probably have, if there's ever an issue, here's where we're going to release it, you know, and that's not going to be on their website. It's not going to be on their X/Twitter. It's going to be, you know, look at this blog, you know, or something like that. And that's where they're going to let you know of breaches. So
Sunday's newspaper in Ohio.
Are we looking on time, guys? I just want to make sure we're okay. We got
it's already almost 1 p.m. CST, so we should move along.
Yeah, I don't know what time my next meeting is. I gotta figure that out real quick. I'm good. I'm good till 2. So we'll go 2 Eastern. So we're good. We got 20 minutes. We'll wrap up in a few minutes here. So moving right along, we have another K-12 school. Up in Michigan, I think Randy told me this is where Traverse City is. Yep. They are, their Traverse City Area Public School is dealing with a cyber breach investigation. They've been shut down all week. What do we know so far? What's the scope? Just that, you know, they've been hit with a network incident. And they have taken the systems offline. Is that as far as we know, or do we know a little bit more now?
That's about as far as we know. 2 days, so yesterday and then now today, 2 days of closing down the schools because of a network disruption. Not a lot of details into exactly what's going on, although I think there's some stuff we can get from between the lines.
Yeah, network incident. You know, if there was a fiber wire that got cut that took down the internet, they would have just said, hey, it was a fiber cut. Darn those guys out there. Or yep. If it was a switch or a router, hey, our Cisco firewall went down. It's in the mail, the replacement. But no, just a network incident.
Yeah, well, everybody's going to call it a network incident until they actually have to say they've been attacked or breached.
Because you want to be careful with what you say, because it can come back and bite you in the butt later.
Because it could be a switch.
Right.
And you don't want to say it's a cyber attack until you really know, right? So for sure, the smart thing to do is to make sure, and you may know, right? And there's an appropriate time to do it. But I also think that there's also businesses that play the waiting game for other reasons, you know, you know, because they might not want their stock price to go down, or a big contract they're about to sign, you know, would be in jeopardy. So let's make sure we're withholding information for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons, if we're going to withhold information, number one. So how do, and just like I talked about earlier, guys, with kind of like on the Omni thing, like they don't get the luxury of hiding this stuff because it's so obvious to customers.
Mm-hmm.
I think schools fall in the same category, right? Kids can't go to school. And let's just, you know, we all know how that impacts families, right? Young kids, parents got to take off from work, right? You know, it's not like they can just leave them in the house alone when schools shut down. So this becomes a major inconvenience for the community that these schools serve, right? It's not just about the kids not getting an education. This can cause a lot of stress and a lot of grief in families, depending on, you know, the parents' work situation. Not everybody has the ability to call out of work. You're a doctor, you're a nurse. That can be difficult, right? You don't have a job where you have, you know, a lot of time off, or maybe you used a lot of your time off already early in the year with an early vacation. And now something like this totally unplanned happens, and now it impacts your life. So that to me is like, this is how cyber attacks affect schools differently than maybe some other businesses. Do you guys have any other insights and maybe some things that you think about around like how it impacts schools maybe differently than the business?
I'm thinking about, you know, looking at it as a, from a different, you know, point of view, people saying, well, can't you still go to school and go to class? And do you really need a computer for the teacher to lecture you or read a story or, you know, go to recess or whatever? And everything we do is so tied to technology these days.
Two quick points.
Yesterday, our local coffee shop was down. I'm like, can I just give you like cash, you know, for these tacos that are going to go bad? You know, nope, can't do it. Can I give you my credit card and you put it in later? Nope. You know, can you make a list and I'll come back and pay tomorrow? And these people know me by name. Nope. They couldn't do any of that.
So and why then, are we here?
Yeah. Just had to wait here. And then my last point is, I think we've mentioned on the show before, I did hear like a year ago, an Amish roofer who actually got permission from Amish elders to have certain levels of technology, because there's literally no way to do business these days with a pen and paper as it relates to roofing. So a couple of thoughts there. I'll let y'all take it from there.
Don't bring up Amish on this show ever again. Like, not that I don't have any issue, but like, come on. Like,
but it's true. I mean, the point being is, even the Amish roofers can't function in 2024 without technology.
Welcome to the world controlled by Fang. I mean, this is where the world's going. So the other thing too that, you know, we talk about on this show a lot with schools when they're attacked is they got to get this stuff fixed quick for the exact reasons I mentioned earlier. Like, you're requiring people to take off from work and stuff, and you're not really providing a viable alternative for them. So the pressure's on, like, because everybody who works for these districts has to answer to people who vote. At least where I'm from, you know, most of these school board members have to be voted on. So if you don't handle this situation properly in a small town like Traverse City, there's a good chance that you're not going to have that job, you know, in the future if this isn't handled well. So this impacts, you know, administrators and the leaders of the schools as well, because they have to come up with a very quick plan to get back up and running. So What am I saying by saying all this? It means that they're more likely to pay the ransom. That's why K-12 schools are such a target for cyber criminals, because A, they're usually on a scale of 1 to 10, they're like a 2 when it comes to like how hard or how easy, 1 being the most easy, 10 being the most hard. They're like a 2 for a cyber criminal to break into. And they're like an 8 or 9 on whether they're going to get the ransomware payment or not. If they're more than likely going to get it because these schools are so ill-prepared. They're not investing in the proper business continuity so they can recover from these incidents. So the recovery plan becomes paying the ransom and getting the decryption key from the cyber criminals. Any tips for administrators that might be watching this on how they can bolster cybersecurity before we move on to our final topic of the day?
Yes.
It's a long laundry list, but I would definitely, you know, we've even seen reports from the FBI where they're talking about how hackers are going after the school districts, you know. So if I had to give one, 2-factor authentication on everything.
Yes, and my point would be your on-staff team, as amazing as they are, they're probably most likely statistically not equipped to handle this kind of thing. And you really need to just have, at the very minimum, have a whole layer of cybersecurity provided by an outside company.
Yeah, that and make, and if you do feel like you do have the best team, which I know there's school district superintendents in my area who think that their IT head is a superstar when it comes to cybersecurity. That might be true, but a risk assessment is the only way you're going to find that out if that's actually true. So as much as you love the person that might be running your cybersecurity right now, how awesome you think they are, which they probably are, there's nothing wrong with telling them that you're going to get an independent third-party risk assessment done just to make sure that that awesome person isn't missing one little thing here or there. Because that's all a cyber criminal really needs to do, the damage that they do. Any final thoughts before I move into the MSP who's getting sued by their customer? So here we go. So final topic of the day. Law firm sues MSP over ransomware attack. Now, I know a little bit about this without reading the article, but this was following a Black Bastard ransomware attack. And this law firm, number one, I feel bad for the MSP because they kind of violated the cardinal rule of like doing business, especially when you're doing business with lawyers. And they didn't really have an agreement in place. I mean, you don't have an agreement in place with a law firm, that's like stupid, like beyond stupid. Like, because they don't pay when they need to sue you. Like, they're not paying, they're paying, it's internal costs. You know what I mean? So, in other words, they have pretty much unlimited firepower to sink you and go after you. Mm-hmm. So not having these things in place is, you know, stupid. I mean, that's the only word that comes to mind when I say this stuff. So essentially, this MSP has been accused by this law firm for not protecting their data as a result of this ransomware event from Black Bastard. And the other interesting thing is that the law firm is basically going back to a lot of the marketing material that this MSP puts out, because again, the agreement between these two entities was not that strong. And when you don't have a strong agreement in place, then things like this can happen, where the law firm then looks at your marketing material, looks at all the things that you may have put in front of them when they were deciding to hire you. And then they give that to the courts or they give that to a jury and say, look, they said on their website that, you know, they protect us from cyber criminals so we can sleep at night. And they failed to do that. And then they go into this whole thing of like how they failed to protect them from cyber criminals. And they may have never even been hired to do that, but because they were saying it on their website, the law firm jumped all over it and sued them. And where is this at now, guys? Because that's the kind of little bit that I knew from what I read before and what I heard about last week. Where is this? Is there anything more to this that I missed?
No, you're absolutely right. They're using Acronis, which is a very, you know, Acronis, a very popular backup disaster recovery. They have they provide funds a lot, or brochures where you can kind of white label, but then say powered by Acronis. So they took, like you just said, they used that marketing material, shined it in front of the client. Apparently had a verbal yes, nothing in writing. And they thought they were protected, and probably even the MSP thought everything was protected. And it seems that it's just unfortunate that both the data that is on the server or on premise was, and then the cloud backup, which is interesting.
The cloud backups are deleted, right?
Yes,
so,
but
there's a couple of things that now you're refreshing my memory. Thank you about this case that we should talk about. Right, number one is if you are familiar with the Acronis product, you may be familiar with the product, and you may know, or you probably know, what that tool can do. Okay, one of the things that tool can do is, if somebody deletes the backup, there's some kind of like check in place, like meaning a password is presented, or they have to put in a two-factor code, or there's something that's required to be entered before those backups are actually deleted. And from what I read, the MSP failed to implement the setting that requires that. So essentially, when Black Basta got in there, they saw they were running Acronis. They were able to access the tool, and they were able to delete the backups without being challenged in any way. On top of it, the law firm was able to determine that the MSP had no visibility that this even occurred. So the thought process being, if you're actually properly protecting them, you would have been alerted when somebody started deleting backups out of the system. And because they failed to turn those two things on, the law firm is saying that the MSP should be held liable. There's more things that this MSP wasn't doing, but when it comes to just the related to the backup being deleted, I know that's one thing that was said, that this MSP failed to configure this product correctly. Right. So here's what I was saying earlier about, you know, what I was alluding to earlier when we were talking about the schools and your blind trust in your guy. Yeah, your guy can be great. He might tell you, yeah, we deployed Acronis, but he forgot to configure it correctly, or he didn't know he was supposed to configure it a certain way. And now you're left vulnerable that if a Black Bastard gets in there, they're going to delete your backups, right? And these are the things that, like, I get concerned about with business owners when they're like, oh, yeah, well, we invested in this tool, Acronis, and, you know, we're good. Well, it's like, that's great, but are you sure that system is configured and set up correctly to keep you resilient through, you know, something like a Black Bastard cyber attack?
I'm just going to throw in there, man. This is something that has been driving me crazy for several years. And it's not just backup software. There's so much security software out there, backup software, endpoint security, that literally provides no notifications that it's been removed, that it's been changed. Like, I've always thought, if I was going to be a hacker, which I'm not, but if I was going to be a hacker, you don't need to go in and necessarily delete the backups. You can even just change the backups and then let them expire over like 60 days or 90 days or however long they're set. You've got their critical data, have them back up a different directory. So the backups are still happening, and the literal only notification options on so many of these, it's just whether or not they're happening. You don't get notified that they were changed, that, you know, you used to be backing up 8 critical directories. You know, now you're backing up a temp file directory that they created. So that's a hole security-wise that I've seen, and it's been bugging me for a long time. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a really good point. And we'll see, you know, Andre, use Acronis. Does Acronis have that, or do you still, I saw you on a post one time at some thing from there. So I don't want to throw you out in the
let's just say, I appreciated them taking me to the Formula One event.
So. Okay. And I'm just wondering, do they even have these this notification capability that backups have been changed? Do they offer that?
They do. 100% they do. In this case, the MSP did not configure the tool correctly.
Okay. That's good.
And this is also a perfect example of where, you know, for a few more dollars or $100, whatever the case is, depending on how much data, where you have, you know, do unlimited backup or keep it for a year or and I know there's even a setting where if you delete the backup, it doesn't get deleted from the actual company. It's
like immutable backups.
Yeah,
immutable backups were not in place here. And that's the big thing. Like these backups were accessible. They were like one point in time like thing, and they were just able to wipe them out. It was like it's like your economy version of backups is literally and even more so. You compound that with the fact that the tool was not configured properly. I feel bad for this MSP. I mean, this law firm unfortunately has got them. But this is just important for all businesses to know. You need to make sure you have good contracts in place with all your vendors, including your MSP. And you need to be checking your MSP with a third party, you know, to make sure that they're not doing things like this. Unfortunately, guys, I got to run. We got to end the show. So appreciate it. Go ahead.
One more thing. And just because they flashed a fancy Acronis brochure, their terms and conditions does not cover you, the client. So that attorney, they can put that they're suing Acronis, but their terms and condition is that it's up to that MSP to configure it and do whatever.
100%.
Dang, good point.
All right, guys. Good luck. Good luck to that MSP. We'll see everyone next week. Thanks for your support. Share the show.
All right. Bye, y'all.